Welcome to KPMG's podcast series on the intersection of tax and ESG, environmental, social, and governance. I'm your host, Brent Weaver, head of KPMG's U.S. tax ESG practice and tax lead for our firm's impact offerings, KPMG Impact. Our impact solutions enhance and empower your ESG initiatives. We assist companies to unlock new value as they build a sustainable future. In this new mini-series of podcasts focusing on tax ESG, my guests and I will explore the role of tax in a company's overall ESG journey. Following up on our previous podcast on tax strategy, in today's podcast, we'll discuss tax governance and controls. We'll look at tax governance from the board level and throughout the organization. We'll also dive into the tax control framework, what it is, and what good looks like. Joining me today are Matt McNeil, KPMG Impact U.S. Tax Transparency Leader, and Dion Menar, partner leading our board advisory practice. Welcome, Dion and Matt. Happy to have you on today's podcast.
Thank you.
Hey, Brett. Thanks for having us.
Great. Okay, guys. Well, let's dive into our discussion today. From my perspective, you certainly cannot, turn on any other type of podcast media or anything else we want to read. There's a lot of discussions about ESG, and particularly the E and the S part, right? There seems to be a lot of discussion, particularly around expectations for companies around the environment, et cetera, and a lot of social issues in the ESG side. It seems like the G part of ESG, right, the governance side, doesn't quite get as much airtime. And so, Dion, maybe I'll turn to you since this is, kind of your world, right? Why does governance matter and how does it fit into what we're trying to accomplish in ESG?
Thanks, Brett. And I definitely think that the E has received a lot more share of mine, and it's understandable, right? It's the environment. It is a subject everybody cares about, for sure, and it impacts all of us. I'm also happy to say I've seen a ton more activities around the S in the last, I would say, 6 to 12 months. And we've all seen CEOs make large statements about being net zero by a certain date, be it 2030, 2035, et cetera, et cetera. But, and sometimes they've had to walk them back as well. So I do applaud their ambition, but sometimes they have not really considered the governance that actually has to make it happen, right? And sometimes they even surprise their own company employees and executives in the statements that they make. But I see the G as, making E and S happen and stick at a company. And, I'll unpack that in the next couple of minutes as well. But before I get going, let me just give a couple of quick statistics that will definitely catch your eyes and ears. Our board leadership center, together with Edelman Financial Communication, put out a short paper this year called Building ESG Trust with Investors. So it's focused on the board. But some of the statistics that Edelman does in their annual trust survey is really impactful. So the first one was 86% of investors question the accuracy of the ESG disclosure. And 91% of investors look at for instances where companies have not delivered on their promises, right? So both of these statistics, whether even if you discount them down a bit, they are substantial, right? And both of these really point to governance, right? So I feel like, getting the governance piece right will really, at the end of the day, impact everybody from the board to the mailroom. And that's unfortunately what governance is required to look for, is all the way from the board into the mailroom to see what is it that we need to do to enable good ESG. So as Brett mentioned, my focus professionally is a little bit more on the board. So I'll give him maybe a couple more board type examples, but you'll start to see how that flows easily into any kind of tax function or frankly other functions within the entity. But the boards are definitely paying a lot of attention to ESG, and because they're accountable for oversight. And frankly, if anybody is going to be let go in the near future through the proxy, it's the board, because the shareholders can vote very quickly through the proxy to actually, and we've seen it already, to say that the board is not doing enough on ESG, and therefore they want to start to replace them. So if the board is focused on a topic, I guarantee you the company is going to be focused on that topic as well. So irrespective of where your organization is, there's going to be focus on this. So when I think of governance, it in itself is a broad topic, right? So it deals with things like committees, how am I structured, from an organizational perspective, but it goes down all the way into controls in the various depths of the organization. That's also governance. And the other challenge is ESG is a very broad topic in itself because it covers the entire value chain of an organization. So by definition, the G is how am I enabling all things around ESG? So the breadth of the topic together with the breadth of the subject matter, ESG, creates a bit of a challenge there. So with that, I always like to simplify as I take my clients through or speak to my boards about, ESG. So I focus on three primary guiding principles. The first one is start with the end in mind. Now, as a tax function, what does that mean for you? So it might mean in reporting. So as I'm thinking through my governance, so what is it that I need to think about from an end state perspective so I can design accordingly? So it's reporting, compliance, et cetera. The second one, which is really quite critical as well, is integrate ESG requirements into existing governance structures as much as possible. And I'm not saying that everything can be integrated because there will be certainly new positions formed because of ESG. There certainly will be new processes formed, but to the extent possible, as a function, integrate into existing governance structures, just for efficiency's sake, but also just, at the end of the day, it should be part of DNA, if we fast forward 4 or 5 years. The last guiding principle that I use is drive accountability relentlessly. And, if I just unpack that last one a little bit, I really believe people are what they're measured by. So if somebody is accountable for something, in this case, ESG, within a function, they are going to be driving processes, measures, controls, et cetera. There's no doubt about it. Now, whether you're CEO and accountable for strategy or you're head of tax and you're responsible for driving opportunities that come out of ESG, it doesn't matter. That accountability is really quite key. So then if you look at those three combined, three guiding principles combined, and you use that almost as your guidepost, I really feel that it'll go a long way to design future-ready governance structure.
And that's really insightful in terms of what the board needs to be focused on, Dion. So question for you, at the end of the day, once you understand all of that, is this a simple compliance exercise?
It is absolutely not a compliance exercise. And I think some companies may initially approach it as such, but if you just think of the pressure that's on an organization from the shareholders, other stakeholders, et cetera, it has to be much broader than, it has to be part of the DNA eventually. So it has to be much broader than a compliance exercise. So you've got your strategy at the top. We talked about tech strategy in last podcast. Now you're starting to look at the enabler, the G piece of it. Now, the last thing to mention before I hand it back to Brett is it's a one size fits one. And what I mean by that is every organization has its own unique organizational strategy. Each organization has its own unique ESG strategy and how that integrates. Frankly, you'll have a very unique tax strategy. Then on top of that, the governance structure that you're starting with, that accountability and the processes that you have and the governance structure, meaning from a committee perspective, et cetera, all that is unique to your organization. So if you're looking at building a future ready state, it's important to understand what is my current state and what, if I'm looking at integrating ESG requirements, et cetera, from an organization perspective into my current state, what else do I need to build or create in order to enable that? So it is a one size fits one. It's not a simple compliance matter that you might say, okay, well, I'm just going to add a couple of people and be done with it. It really needs to be integrated into the organization. So with that as a mindset as well, create that governance structure that will create repeatable, reliable information to flow through that.
Great. Thanks, Dion. You've given us a really excellent overview of the board's responsibilities and what you're seeing in the ESG space and tied it into tax, which is fantastic. And so let's go a little bit deeper in the tax aspects here. And Matt, I want to bring you into the conversation. There's a number of standard setters out there, as we all know, right? And the leading standard setters all have really set out what good tax governance looks like. Could you walk us through those standards and, as tax professionals, what should we be looking for in terms of just understanding, good tax governance?
Yeah, thanks, Brett, and thanks, Dion, as well. You've got that right. You know, there are a number of NGOs or standard setters out there that have put out guidance on what good tax governance looks like. I think it's important to understand, though, before we get into the specifics of any of the standards, to recognize, really, you know, when we're in this tax space, the purpose of tax governance. But today, as we see a shift in stakeholder expectations, as we see a shift in the standards that are being put out, and you know the requirements that companies have to abide by, that frankly are going beyond just the law and the regs. When we look at this NGO guidance, we've seen a greater focus on governance as a tool to ensure adherence with or alignment to those heightened standards. So as I mentioned, there are a number of NGOs out there with guidance in this regard, but it might be helpful to focus in on one of them to get a sense of some of the key focus areas. So for example, let's look at what GRI, the Global Reporting Initiative, which is one of the NGOs, says good governance looks like. If we look at GRI 207-2, this is the guidance that they've put out, to focus on quote, tax governance, control, and risk management, you'll see they're asking companies to report publicly on a few different things. One, a description of the governance body or executive level position that is accountable for compliance with the tax strategy. Two, how the approach to tax is embedded within the broader organization. Three, how the company measures or evaluates compliance with its tax governance or tax control framework. Four, a description of the mechanism the company has for reporting unethical or unlawful behavior with respect to tax. And five, a description of the assurance process for disclosures on tax. So, Brett, as you can see, this guidance is all about how the organization actually lives out its strategy.
Well, thanks, Matt. That's a great walkthrough. There's a lot of things in there in, you know, GRI's, you know, standards that they're looking for. Let me kind of circle back to you, and Dion may want to jump in here as well. I mean, as you walk through those things, you know, I want to take it back to the board. You know, what responsibility does the board have with respect to everything that you just walked through?
Yeah, that's a good one, Brett, and certainly we'll ask Dion to chime in here as well. I can certainly speak to what many of the standard setters are looking for, and they are certainly looking for greater board involvement in both defining the company's tax strategy, but also ensuring that the company is living it out and adhering to it, right? Really, really taking ownership of compliance with the strategy, that tax governance piece. We see, frankly, in my practice, we see a fair amount of pushback from companies on this point, and you know, a lot of pushback around whether or not that is, in fact, within the purview of a global board of directors. I don't know, yeah. Dion, if you might have other views there as well.
So maybe just add a few things to those comments, because the board, if you think of the overall responsibility, is oversight of all things in an organization. They are absolutely accountable for ownership of succession planning for the CEO and compensation setting for the CEO and often the executive as well. But most other responsibilities and oversight responsibility. There is an expectation that a board is fully engaged in all things for the company, but fully engaged is not to the level of management, right? So the board will not set strategy, overall set strategy. They will oversee strategy. And I think similarly, I think they'll be hard-pressed to say they have to either set tax strategy, but they will absolutely be responsible for oversight of tax strategy. Similarly, if you think of what the board is responsible for, there are many, many priority areas of focus. So depending on the nature of the company, will probably depend on the amount of time they dedicate to tax and tax strategy as well, complexity, et cetera, right? So I think maybe that sort of adds some additional flavor to what the board would be expected to be involved with from a tax perspective.
Well, and Dion, you know, there, you raise a really good point. And I think it reminds me of some of the variability we see in the guidance from the various NGOs, or what some of the ESG rating agencies are looking for in this space as well. And some of them don't go as far as asking companies to have the board involved in the strategy, but rather somebody in the chain of command above the head of tax having responsibility and oversight and a role in developing the strategy and ensuring compliance with the tax strategy. And I think it gets to the fundamental issue that they're looking for, which really is this idea that tax strategy is not being developed in a bubble, right? That it's in fact part of something that management overall, something that the organization overall is involved in development and then living out. So I think we see some of that variability in the standards as well.
Great stuff, guys. I think that is something, Matt, as you mentioned, we see companies oftentimes really, trying to understand the board's involvement. I think you guys really demystified that. But I got one other for you, Matt. As you walk through the GRI standards, I know that's only one of a few, but, one other item you mentioned that, intrigues me, and I've seen companies ask questions about what this really means, right? And that is, right, you mentioned there an expectation that companies would embed their approach to tax throughout the organization. What does that really mean, and how do companies do that?
Well, I think here the answer goes back to a comment Dion made earlier that, one size fits one, right? Let's remember to start with the purpose of embedding your approach to tax in your organization, right? That is to ensure that the other functions across the organization are in fact living out the values or principles you've committed to in your tax strategy, right? To ensure that your operational folks or your legal team is not out setting up structures or engaging in transactions, et cetera, that are misaligned with the level of tax risk you're willing to take on as an organization, the jurisdictions you're willing to operate in, et cetera. How is tax plugged into what the organization is doing overall? Is there, a sign-off process in place, et cetera? When we think about the, indirect tax rates, right? VAT application of withholding rates or collection and remittance, oftentimes that's managed by accounting folks or other functions throughout the organization or even much of that being automated through the ERP or other systems. Is tax feeding into reviewing and updating those systems to ensure that the right withholding rates are in the system? What's the review process to ensure that on an annual basis or over time, at least, all of that information remains up to date with the law and regulations in the jurisdictions in which you're operating, right? Tax risk management matrices and more robust processes supporting the review of transactions, clear definitions of, levels of authority, et cetera, are all crucial to designing tax governance that's integrated into the organization and not just standalone or external. So these are some of the pieces that, we look at and that I think are part and parcel of a truly embedded tax function.
There's some great examples, Matt. I think it really drives home what it's meant by, embedding the approach to tax throughout the organization. Sounds like a lot of work too. So we'll leave that to you and your team. So let me move on to another topic then. And, that is, as we think about, companies right out there, they're making money, fulfilling their mission. And have this view of wider stakeholders, right? Tax is a pretty big deal on most companies, both operating model, but also in their financial statements, right? It can be anywhere from, a fifth to a third of their profits, right, are reflected by tax. So I get this idea that, more transparency around tax and how companies manage tax risk, right, is a big deal. Could you spend a little bit of time, on the mechanics of good tax risk management? I mean, we've heard, terms such as tax control framework, et cetera. Can you just dive a little bit deeper for our audience into, what this really means of good tax risk management?
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to. And I think it's important with all of these questions in our discussion here today, Brett, I think it's important to make sure we've got things and contextualize them, right? And understand how these different pieces are fitting together. So in that regard, let's consider the tax control framework, right? Each company may view that slightly differently, but you know, a number of years ago, there's some really helpful guidance from the OECD on how to build tax control frameworks. I think that, you know, reflects the major components of any tax control framework, regardless of how your organization might pull these things together. At KPMG, when we're working with our clients, we often talk about the tax control framework being composed of a few different components, right? So first, you've got the strategy. So you've got your tax strategy or policy statement. And as we've discussed earlier today and in previous episodes of this podcast, this is where you define your approach to tax and where you define your tax risk appetite, and answering that question of how close to the line are we willing to get? What amount of risk are we willing to live with from a tax perspective? Second, then it's how you operationalize that commitment and strategy. And we do that through the tax risk management policy. This is a policy document internal to the organization that defines roles and responsibilities in regards to managing tax risk, defines levels of authority, who makes what kind of decisions, defines the governance tools you'll use as an organization. Those governance tools might involve, you know, transaction review committees. It might include bright line policy documents that prevent certain types of transactions or activities. Or it might be the assignment of certain tax personnel to monitoring tasks. So third, then the next layer down really is the controls you put in place to ensure compliance with the policy. And note here, we're not talking about SOX controls. What we're really talking about here are the types of controls, the mechanisms that you use as a tax organization to monitor compliance with your tax strategy. Fourth, we then look to the processes within the organization, the things that, you know, maybe don't rise to the level of governance or controls, but the way the tax department or other functions do their work that minimizes tax risk. And finally, fifth, we look to the systems and technology deployed that can help identify, manage, and mitigate tax risk. So certainly many layers to that, Brett, and with the systems and the technology, that's certainly an evolving space. But again, you know, finding ways to utilize those to really, you know, have an early identification of potential risks and mitigate those once identified.
All right. Thanks, guys. Hey, we've covered a lot of really good material today. And I tell you, from the outside looking in, it looks like it's definitely worth evaluating, where I sit with my governance and controls and if I've got a little bit of work to do. Let me just give you both a quick last word here. I mean, you've worked with companies as they have examined, the need to enhance their governance and controls. What does that journey look like? And Dion, let me start with you.
So I think as you start the journey, if I start with the board again and then just work it down, I think the board has a very high expectation of management, including the tax function, to have a very good governance process in place so that the board can have oversight responsibility and make sure that data information that flows to them is reliable and repeatable. And I think with that in mind, from a tax perspective, if you think of it, ESG covers the entire value chain of the company. So how do you, from a risk perspective, understand what that value chain is, what changes are going to be made to it, and how do you gain opportunities as well, tax benefits, et cetera, from that? And I think those are the things that the expectation of the board is to have that right, strong governance structure in place to be able to, for them to have the oversight responsibility.
Fantastic, Dion. I really love the way you put the perspective of what the board's really looking for and how they do their job in this space. Matt, let me turn to you. I mean, focusing on the company, what's your view on that journey?
Well, I think when we, do that double click and focus on tax governance, we've got to start with the tax strategy, right? We've got to know what we are governing, what we are are trying to, wrap the governance around. And so, it's important not to just sort of check the box with respect to what your tax strategy and principles are, but to go through that, soul searching process as an organization to say, what is it that we're willing to do? Where do we draw the line from a risk perspective? What's too risky? And define all of that. So then you can then build the governance, as we talked about, right? With the tax risk management policy, the controls, and the processes, and then ultimately the systems, et cetera, to support that. Now that often sounds, when we talk through that, it sounds like a big, scary task. But I think Dion mentioned something early in the podcast that's really important. And I want to reiterate it here, right? This is often about leveraging the existing governance within the organization, right? Most companies that we talk to have a lot of this governance already in place in some way, shape, or form. And the discussion is often about making that more robust, documenting it, and ensuring that it will stand up to scrutiny from external stakeholders that are putting a greater focus on this.
Well, thanks, Matt. Great summary. And I'd like to thank you both for your time today on the podcast and, sharing your experiences and expertise. I think you really helped demystify, at least for me, this area around governance and controls in the tax ESG space. And for audience, please join me next time on our Tax ESG podcast series, where we'll do a deep dive into tax transparency. If you have any questions or comments, please feel free to send me an email. That's Brett Weaver, and my email address is baweaver@kpmg.com. Also, please check out our KPMG Impact webpage at visit.kpmg.us/impact. While there, please sign up for our ESG alerts to get the latest insights on ESG. Thank you for joining us today, and have a great day.